Good morning, and welcome to Overeaters Anonymous, a Vision for You Big Book Study. My name is Dawn B., and I'm a recovered compulsive overeater from Southern California. Today is Friday, September 11th, 2020, and this is the 10 a.m. Eastern Time meeting. Today we are reading from the Big Book, and we are on page 5 in Bill's story, the second paragraph, starting with Gradually Things Got Worse, through two paragraphs, ending with That Chance Vanished, commenting on both paragraphs. Today's readers are 12 Steps, Lois P., 12 Traditions, Kathy S. The reader of the text this morning will be Sherry M., and reading on page 164 is Jordan L. Our backup reader this morning is Shelley E. The reference numbers for Thursday, September 10th, 10 a.m. Eastern Time meeting was 15,331. That's 15331. And for this morning, Friday, September 11th, 7 a.m. Eastern Time meeting, the reference number is 15,335. That's 15335. Our newcomer greeter this morning will be Lisa E.S., and Betsy H. will do our announcements. OA Preamble. Overeaters Anonymous is a fellowship of individuals who, through shared experience, strength, and hope, are recovering from compulsive overeating. We welcome everyone who wants to stop eating compulsively. There are no dues or fees for members, and we are self-supporting through our own contributions, neither soliciting nor accepting outside donations. OA is not affiliated with any public or private organization, political movement, ideology, or religious doctrine. We take no position on outside issues. Our primary purpose is to abstain from compulsive overeating and compulsive food behaviors and to carry the message of recovery through the 12 steps of OA to those who still suffer. Our sole purpose. OA's fifth tradition states, each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. At A Vision for You Big Book Study, our message is that people who suffer from compulsive overeating can recover through abstinence and the practice of the 12 steps and 12 traditions of Overeaters Anonymous. I will now ask Lois P. to read the 12 steps. Good morning, Lois.
Good morning, Dawn. Good morning, everyone. This is Lois P., recovered in New York. Here are the 12 steps. 1, we admitted we were powerless over food and that our lives had become unmanageable. 2, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. 3, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood Him. 4, made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. 5, admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. 6, we're entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. 7, humbly asked Him to remove our shortcomings. 8, made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. 9, made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. 10, continued to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. 11, sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood Him, praying only for knowledge of His will for us and the power to carry that out. And 12, having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to compulsive overeaters and to practice these principles in all our affairs. Thank you for the opportunity to serve, and with that I pass.
Thank you so much, Lois P. I will now ask Kathy S. to read the 12 traditions. Good morning, Kathy.
Good morning, Dawn. This is Kathy S., recovered compulsive overeater in Georgia. The 12 traditions. 1, our common welfare should come first. Personal recovery depends upon OA unity. 2, for our group purpose, there is but one ultimate authority, a loving God, as He may express Himself in our group conscience. Our leaders are but trusted servants. They do not govern. 3, the only requirement for OA membership is a desire to stop eating compulsively. 4, each group should be autonomous, except in matters affecting other groups or OA as a whole. 5, Each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. 6, an OA group ought never endorse, finance, or lend the OA name to any related facility or outside enterprise, lest problems of money, property, and prestige divert us from our primary purpose. 7, every OA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. 8, Overeaters Anonymous should remain forever non-professional, but our service centers may employ special workers. 9, OA as such ought never be organized, but we may create service boards or committees directly responsible to those they serve. 10, Overeaters Anonymous has no opinion on outside issues, hence the OA name ought never be drawn into public controversy. 11, our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, films, television, and other public media of communication. And 12, anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all these traditions, ever reminding us to place principles before personalities. Thanks, and I pass.
Thank you so much, Kathy S. How our meeting works. Our meeting focuses on the directions for recovery described in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. We read a paragraph or two from the literature and then stop and share on what was read. Anyone can share, but we ask that you keep your sharing to the topic and literature we are discussing, and that you keep your share to approximately 3 minutes. Singleness of purpose reminds us to identify as compulsive overeaters only. Our abstinence requirement for moderators is 1 year and for readers is 6 months. There is no abstinence requirement for sharing on topic. This meeting does request that your sharing be directly linked to what was read. We are sharing what the directions in the Big Book mean to us. To share, press star 1 to unmute. Once you are done sharing, let us know by saying pass, and then press star 1 to mute your phone. In order to have a quiet meeting, everyone's phone except the speaker's should be muted. Today, we resume our study of the Big Book. We're on page 5 in Bill's story, the second paragraph, starting with gradually things got worse, through 2 paragraphs, ending with that chance vanished, commenting on both paragraphs. I will now ask Sherry M. to begin reading. Good morning, Sherry.
Good morning, Dawn. This is Sherry M. in California, recovered, grateful. Here we go. Gradually things got worse. The house was taken over by the mortgage holder. My mother-in-law died. My wife and father-in-law became ill. Then I got a promising business opportunity. Stocks were at the low point of 1932, and I had somehow formed a group to buy. I was to share generously in the profits. Then I went on a prodigious bender, and that chance vanished. Wow. First of all, again, my name is Sherry. I'm a recovered compulsive overeater in California, and I'm so grateful. Thank you so much, Dawn, for your service and for everyone who puts these meetings together on a daily basis. My life is saved by being part of this group and listening to these meetings. These paragraphs, you know, I have to say, prior to finding a vision, I would have just skimmed over this chapter. I had nothing in common with Bill. I couldn't get it. And I'm also an alcoholic, and I still couldn't identify with Bill. There was nothing about it. And it, you know, it's going through the paragraph by paragraph and listening to all of you that, and then hearing one of our fellows who I love listening to her podcast saying, did I eat like Bill drank? Did I think like Bill? Did I feel like Bill? And by asking myself these questions, and identifying, and I'm able to really see the similarities here and how, you know, I love going through Bill's story. I mean, it just is like one bottom after another, one bottom, but it's still not the bottom. You know, it's still not the bottom. You know, with all this great luck that Bill had, and here we go, and now, you know, I have a group, and how did that come about? And I can buy these stocks, and again, the chance vanished. You know, I love, there's an Irish saying that we hear in AA a lot, a man takes a drink, the drink takes a drink, and then the drink takes the man. And there's really no way out of this vicious cycle until we don't take that first bite in our case or first drink and admit complete defeat. And stop lying to ourselves that it will be okay this time. Gradually things got worse. So I love that word gradually, slowly and in increments, you know, over time. Yes, my, you know, the first time I started having an abnormal relationship with food was at age 7. Growing up in a abusive household, that was the first time I checked up on, you know, checked out on food, but it just continued and continued and vicious cycle, vicious cycle. You know, this is just, once again, just such a great reminder to me that nothing can get in the way of being an alcoholic or being a compulsive overeater except for God. This is a spiritual program, and it wasn't until I could completely put all of my alcoholic foods down and start working the 10 steps all day. Those were the two things that were missing for me after being in OA for 15 years, and now I get to live a recovered life where I can be present for everything, and it is such a gift. And there is my time. I'm going to pass. Thank you for letting me be of service. I can't wait to hear from all of you.
Thank you so much, Sherry M. Although we value your experience, we ask that you limit your share to every third day in order that others might share their experience too. So now I open up the lines, and I would ask for any of you, especially for those who haven't shared, go ahead and put your name out there, and who would like to share this morning?
Christina J.
Evan R.
Brandy M.
Christina J. Evan R. Was that Randy?
Brandy M. Brandy M.
Randy M. Was that Randy or Brandy?
Brandy.
Okay, Brandy M. I've got Christina J, Evan R, Brandy M. Who did I miss?
Irene B.
Irene B. And there was someone else in there.
Matt F.
Matt F. Okay, I've got Christina J, Evan R, Brandy M, Irene B, and Matt F. Go ahead, Christina J.
Good morning, everyone. Christina J. from the state of Washington this morning. And, wow, you know, I just was like, the last share talking about being present, I think I was numb from birth, just numbing out everything that was going on around me and holding on to my teddy bears, and then started a routine of just running. Just my mother was a great runner. We ran everywhere as far as, you know, moving to other places, getting new husbands, going to different churches, going to all the food joints. I mean, it was just a run, 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 run. My mother is a compulsive overeater, and so am I. Abnormal, not normal, these prodigious benders that I did all my life. I think they started in my very, very young youth, and they just got worse, as well as the numbing, the isolation, the over-exercising. Everything was about me. My insecurity, my insecure pride, for years and years, just trying to prove to you that I was okay, that you could love me, that you could accept me, just walking around with some weird shame in my gut. And, you know, today I don't even really want to look in the mirror. I don't get up and look in the mirror first thing and start analyzing my hips or my legs or my butt, you know, or my waist. I don't do any of that. And I try to be present for people, and I try to pause before I speak so that I can say what serves, what's going to serve this situation, not trying to manipulate a compliment out of someone or, you know, trying to get something out of it, just trying to be of service. You know, I used to go into the stores and just really make fun of all the heavy people, and, you know, then I got to be one of those heavy people and hide. The disease gets worse and worse and worse. And, you know, the disease part that got worse for me, sure, the eating was the thing that I did to get away from the irritable, restless, and discontent of the disease. But the disease in my head, the self-centeredness, the fear, the resentment, the dishonesty, all just about me forever and ever and ever. And, you know, it's been quite a road to let go of running my life that way, with trying to control and barge through doors and all those things that have just brought me to my knees, either in front of God or in front of the food. And what's my choice today to be? My choice today is God, more than ever. Because if I don't have that, I got nothing, people. I got nothing. And I'm telling you, I've tried everything. So if you're out there and you're struggling, realize that you're powerless over this disease, and it's just going to get worse. And surrender to the fact that, I'm going to finish up, that there are good foods you can eat that are abstinent that won't drive you back and over and over and over. And you'll learn those foods, and it's one step at a time, one day at a time. God bless everyone. Love you. Bye-bye.
Thank you, Christina J. We'll now have Evan R. read. And Evan, you'll be followed by Brandy M. So go ahead, Evan. Evan?
Hey, Evan R. here, recovered, compulsive over here in Southern California. Available to sponsor, by the way, just saying that. But I don't know, we read this, my sponsor and I had to look up prodigious. It's, you know, it says marvelous, great in size, and these benders. And I mean, I've been there, and I was thinking, like, in terms of Bill, kind of reading between the lines, is, you have all these responsibilities you know you're supposed to be getting done, or he did, and I did as well, but I'm still sitting there, like, you know, binging my brains out and just really hitting those bottoms. And it's painful to, like, know you should be doing something, but you're not, and it's almost like you can't, even though you want to. It's like a very, very paradoxical state. But I found what was more insidious is the brief periods of control, but you know, the food is, you know, what you'd think controlled. For me, I think it's controlled, but realistically, I'm still obsessing about, you know, macronutrients, counting all the calories, like, you know, body analysis kind of things, and just living insanely, but believing that I'm not. And that led to, I think, not as much like a deep pain, but just sustained pain long term. And, you know, I'm thankful for Vision in the sense that I got to connect and really, I guess, lock down the big book and understand the mindset more. But, you know, there's still opportunities in my life where I get to take action and take more responsibility, and I don't get to use food as an excuse of why I'm not doing it. So if I don't do it, it's just me. So it's been good practice to take more responsibility for my actions. That's it. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Evan R. And now we'll have Brandy M. share with us, followed by Irene B. Go ahead, Brandy.
Good morning. It's Brandy M., recovered compulsive overeater in Alberta, Canada. Thank you, moderator, for your service. So gradually things got worse. The house was taken over by the mortgage holder. My mother-in-law died. My wife and father-in-law became ill. I was like, wow, that's really relatable to my story. And, you know, I've been in the rooms for about 26 years and chronically relapsing. And I do believe that, you know, in the Big Word book where it talks about, you know, the moderate drinker, the hard drinker, and the real deal, I do believe, like, I mean, I've been in here since I've been 16, and I believe that I went through the stages of that, because there was times in my life where I could moderate, or I could stop if I was going on a trip and lose some weight. And, you know, gradually things kept getting worse. And not only did they get worse with the food, but they got worse with my reactions to life. And so, you know, when I look at this, I'm like, yeah, you know, a year and a half ago, me and my mother-in-law died, my father-in-law died, then my mom got cancer. You know, life was becoming unbearable for me. And in that time, you know, I would have little periods of abstinence, but then I would fall off and it would be so much worse where I was face down in the food and, you know, looking to what the heck happened. And it's, I just feel like, you know, this disease took me to a place of utter desperation. And, you know, it wasn't like I was at desperation the first time I took that first compulsive bite. It was gradually over time. And, you know, I always think, people ask me, you know, when do you think that I'm going to be at a place of desperation like you were? And, you know, I don't know. God only knows. I didn't realize, you know, I'm almost a year clean on Sunday. And I didn't realize that that was going to be my bottom, where I was going to be like, okay, I'm willing to do the work. I'm willing to shut up and show up and stop asking questions and do this work. But for 26 years, I wasn't. I thought I was willing. I thought that, you know, I was putting in a good effort, But that wasn't enough because God was no part of that effort. And today I realize that I lack power. And God has to give me the power to do this every day, get up and show up, wash, rinse, repeat. And that's how I roll today. So with that, I'll pass. Thanks.
Thank you so much, Brandy M. Now we'll have Irene B. share with us, followed by Matt F. Go ahead, Irene.
Good morning. Thank you so much for your service. I am Irene B., a gratefully recovering bulimic from Baton Rouge, Louisiana. Okay, the progression of the disease. I always like to focus on hope for this disease, but for me, until I understood what this disease is doing to me instead of for me, which gave me the gift of desperation, the gift of fear, I stayed in the disease. I think that my eating disorder, my compulsive overeating, the onset was in my infancy as a newborn baby, that my eating disorder was born out of trauma. And my mother lived with me until I was 6 years old, and she was a compulsive overeater. So while I was a compulsive overeater, when I was age 14, I lost weight. And during that period, every day was the happiest day of my life. It was amazing. What a beautiful gift. I have so many happy memories of childhood. And my denial just shoves away all the traumatic events. I just focus on the positive stuff. And my compulsive overeating did get progressively worse over time. But when I became bulimic at age 18, the progression was exponential on steroids. The disease of bulimia grabbed me immediately, mercilessly, four inpatient treating centers, four outpatient treating centers. And they helped me with a lot of stuff. And the trauma was not identified until about a year ago. And I have 41 months of abstinence from bulimia. And I am so grateful that I get to be present, that I get to live, that I'm not in the fog of jittery because my electrolyte balance was too low, or just very, very grateful. But this disease is just horrible, and there is hope, but you know, it would be great. I wish I would have known about OA for bulimics 30 years ago, 20 years ago, 10 Time. Years ago. And with that, I pass. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Irene B. We'll now have Matt F. share. And following Matt, we're going to be opening up the line. So be ready to share if you'd like to. Go ahead, Matt.
Good morning. Thank you for your service. This is Matthew J. F. in Kentucky. What came to me in this reading is something that I think I commented on a while ago, which is there's no why in any of this. I mean, one of the things that I really respect and admire about the way Bill's story is told by Bill is there's no justification. There's no explanation. There's no, like, you know, he mentions gradually things got worse. The house was taken over by the mortgage holder. My mother-in-law died. My wife and father-in-law became ill. Very matter of fact. Then I got a promising business opportunity, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Then I went on a prodigious bender and the chance vanished. He's just reporting, like, this is what happened. There's no drama. There's no perseveration. There's no rumination. There's no protestation. It's just, and what I hear when I read these lines now is, I'm an addict. My substance of choice doesn't really matter. I'm an addict. And part of being an addict, it's ironic, is being a black and white thinker. But part of being an addict is black and white. There's a line from a TV show that I watched recently where one character says to another, "You should know me well enough that I don't negotiate." And the other character looks at her and says, "This wasn't a negotiation." And I've had calls with other people trying to recover recently, very recently, where questions were being asked, and all I could think was, are you negotiating with a steel bear trap? Like, that's my disease. My disease will cloak itself in whatever. It'll cloak itself in, you know, whispers that things aren't so bad. But the truth is, it is a steel bear trap. You know, I can't negotiate with a steel bear trap. I'm either in it or I'm not. And the cleaner edged and more brightly lit I can make the details of my recovery, of my footwork, the better I feel, because the safer I feel like my recovery is, because the clearer it is when I am behaving in a recovered way and when I am not. And I'm really trying to purge vagueness from my life, because that is where that steel bear trap lives. And I'd really like to stay out of it, at least for today. I pass.
Thank you so much, Matt F. Well, we're looking at page 5, the second paragraph, that starts with, "Gradually things got worse," through two paragraphs ending with, "That chance vanished." We're commenting on both those paragraphs this morning. And now I'll be opening up the lines. Although we value your experience, and I'd like everyone to press star ones. We have no background noise. I hear a little background noise. Although we value your experience, we ask that you limit your share to every third day in order that others might share their experience too. Who would like to share with us this morning?
Larry G.
Larry G.
Kathy S.
Veronica D.
Kathy S. Veronica D.
B. Barbara E.
Barbara E. So I've got Larry G, Kathy S, Veronica B, and Barbara E.
One each.
And I heard someone, but I'm not sure. Maybe you could.
Melky
G.
Yes.
With Gwen H.
Sherry M.
And Sherry M. Okay, let's go with that lineup. Sorry if I didn't hear you. Larry G, Kathy S, Veronica B, Barbara E, Melky G, and Sherry M. Good morning, Larry. Go ahead and share with us this morning. Larry G, star one.
This is Larry G from Northern California. Thank you for your service. Man, there's something powerful about being on this call with 200 or 300 people studying the same paragraph and speaking the same paragraph. It's like, to me, it's like going to an AA conference where you've got 2,000 or 3,000 people saying the Our Father at the same time. I'm almost sure that Bill woke up that morning with a frothy emotional appeal that today was going to be different. Today he was going to close the deal. Today he was going to show Lois that he was the man that she married. Today he was going to be the businessman that he knew he could be. And then something happens. And for me, it was something as simple as my brain would just say, eat. I would have these great days, these great weeks. I was not a daily binger. I would have a prodigious binge once a week and just destroy myself. And as I got older and as I did this more and more, it just warped my mind to the point where it would take me two or three days to recover from that. But I would just sit up in bed at night, 100 o'clock at night on Thursday night, and my brain would say, eat. And I would go and eat prodigiously. And I love the metaphor of the steel bear trap, because that's what it was like, trying to wrestle my way out of a steel bear trap. There's a woman that I'm getting to know from Oregon who said binge was coming and she couldn't stop. And I had spent most of my time in OA, probably 20 plus years, thinking that I could stop it. And I did for a while. I would be able to manage one time a week. But then in the end, before I came to Vision in May, no longer one time a week. It was now two times a week, three times a week. And I was spending a great deal of my week recovering from these prodigious binges, putting appointments on hold, moving projects forward to the next day, sitting with my drapes drawn, just crying out, God, but never really. I was through God. God brought me to this vision, and every share is like, oh my God, I eat like that. Oh my God, I eat like that. Oh my God, yeah, I think like that around food. I've been in OA for a long time, and many of the meetings are like therapy sessions, people processing feelings. And what I love about Vision is that we
time.
Read this book, and I will pass. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Larry G. We'll now have Kathy S. share, followed by Veronica B. Good morning, Kathy.
Good morning, Dawn. Thank you for your service. This is Kathy S., recovered compulsive overeater in Georgia. And like everybody else, this first line, gradually things got worse. And the other phrase that jumps out at me is that chance vanished. And it just, not only does it show the progression of the disease and the unmanageability of his life, you know, and what I see, what I visualized with this is kind of like walking out in the water. You know, it slowly gets deeper, and then all of a sudden there's a drop off. So my disease also took this route. Not only did my binging, you know, it just got deeper, it got more continuous, and binges were strung together, and then I was under. And but life situations that I had no control over, my unhappy marriage, my kids moving out and moving on, my parents getting older. And then, you know, I stubbed my toe, the dog barked, I'm alone, you know, and then I'm drowning in the food, and I'm drowning in my unmanageable life when I hit the drop off. And until I took hold of a lifeline that was thrown to me by a friend in program, and you know, and I worked the 12 steps. I had the spiritual experience. And today I got turned around, and gradually I'm walking back towards shore. And in fact, there are days that I have today where I feel like I'm walking on the water. I'm not drowning in fear. And to the degree that I work my 10 steps and keep my eyes on God, not my problems, I am safe. My faith is continuing to grow. I have strength in his power. And, you know, my mother-in-law did die a month or so ago, and I didn't have to sink in all of that. I had grief, but I also had peace, and I had gratitude. And it's just more testimony. It's just, you know, things are gradually getting better. And I enjoy my life now. And I never saw that coming. I had hope for it, but thanks to this program and this fellowship, and of course God's power, it is what I have today. And just thank you. Thank you so much for letting me share.
Thank you so much, Kathy S. And now we'll have Veronica B. share, followed by Barbara E. Good morning, Veronica.
Oh, hi. Good morning. Happy Friday. I'm Veronica. I'm a compulsive overeater and a bulimic from California. So good to be on the line today. And I just wanted to check in. And I just really related to this this paragraph, you know, where it says gradually things got worse. that's the story of my disease for me. You know, I believe I was born an overeater. I was overweight my whole childhood. And when I look at my photos of me and my three sisters, like, I was the only one. I was, like, 30 pounds overweight. Like, even as a child, like, I didn't know how to handle my feelings. You know, I was the oldest of four girls, and I just remember I hated the responsibility of caring for my siblings. I was jealous of them, and I was overweight, and I didn't know why, but I just always turned to food, always, until I discovered diet pills, until I discovered bulimia. I had found my solution. I would eat and throw up. I mean, I couldn't believe that I could have it so good, so I thought. But I was to practice that for 15 years. You know, the eating and throwing up, getting married to a man I was not in love with, getting married to a man who took care of me financially, securely, because I didn't know how to take care of myself. I depended on other people to take care of me. Until I came into the rooms of Overeaters Anonymous, and that's when I started my journey of abstinence, you know, and learning a new way of living. And I've been recovered from compulsive eating and bulimia since July of 2009, you know. But for me, today, it's a daily reprieve contingent on my spiritual maintenance. You know, for all things, I have to turn to God. For all things on a daily basis, sometimes hourly basis, you know, with the hard times lately, I've experienced more grief than I have in years. You know, it seems like with the changes, I'm feeling more grief than usual. And so I have to dig deeper. I have to dig deeper into my heart and ask God to, like, really surround me, be inside me and the side of me. Because I can tend to go to fear if I'm not trusting and relying on God, you know. And I know when I'm in fear, because I take my will back. And I can easily do that if I'm not, you know, taking action to get closer to my higher power on a daily basis. And I am just so grateful that this book tells me how to live a day at a time. This program is a day at a time. You know, so I have to put in the work. God creates the miracles, but I have to do the footwork. So thank you for letting me share. And with that, I pass.
Thank you, Veronica B. And now Barbara E., will you share with us, followed by Melky G. Good morning, Barbara.
Oh, it will be my honor and pleasure. The shares have really touched the inner ear of my heart. I am a compulsive overeater, a volume compulsive overeater. I did not come from a family of abuse. There was no alcoholism or anything. It was a typical middle-class family living in New York City. Overeater's wet dream, I might say, too. I was chubby as a child, not obese. My mom had to take me to the Chubette shop. As I got to be a teenager, she took me to diet doctors that pumped me with shots and gave me pills and made me have monkey brain running around every place. When I was an adult, I actually left my kids at home alone to go down to get the foods I craved. They were young. They were in their cribs. Thank God nothing happened to them. But what a fool I was. And when I stumbled into OA, 23 years ago, I was desperate, as they say, the last stop on the block. I didn't know what OA was. It was a new diet. I didn't come to be spiritually renovated, transformed, but I learned that there's so much more than just getting thin, because thin isn't well, Barbara. Thin is just thin, and wherever you are, there you are. And my life was unmanageable. I was the devil incarnate. My family didn't know that whether they were coming home to Dr. Jekyll or Mrs. Hyde. But I've learned today to recognize that God used my greatest blunders to do his best work, and to know that my character defects and defenses are simply God-given instincts gone haywire. To learn that there are three sides now to every issue, my side, your side, and God's side. And that which is the light of the Spirit will show me not who is right, but rather what is right. So I am so grateful for this program that's taught me how to be silent and listen. And if you look at that, the word silent and listen all have the same letters. And to recognize that fears, and I have so many fears, they get me nowhere. And catastrophizing and thinking back about the fact that this is 9/11. We live in a world that's on fire. It's not just the western portion of our country. Our body changes, our life changes. As we get older, our needs change, our health changes. But we just have to say, let's ask God, clean house, and work with others. Thank you, I pass.
Thank you, Barbara E. And now we'll have Melky G. followed by Sherry M. Good morning, Melky.
Hi, good morning. It's Melky G. from New Jersey. I'm listening. It's hard to catch my own thoughts because the shares were fantastic and powerful this morning. And thank you, everyone, for your honesty and openness. It really helps. Very helpful, at least very helpful to me this morning. So gradually things got worse. You know, it's interesting as I'm reading Bill's story now over and over, and you know, you're reading a story and we know the end. It's like I'm almost starting to get irritated. Like, when is he going to stop? When is he going to live at the answer? When is he going to get there? And you know, I'm just seeing my disease, how like, what God must have looked at me. Like I was just going and going, and I would try everything. My control, I tried every door until I was run out. You know, in the paragraph before, it said I still thought I could control the situation. How bad did things have to get for me to still say I could still control, always find a teeny door and a teeny opening? So gradually things got worse. Yes, I did get sick. That was me. I got sick. And for a little bit, that scared me a little bit. I put down the food, but not long. I went deep dived into the food and in and out and in and out. And then recently my dad suddenly passed away. He was a healthy man. And still things gradually got worse. And what I was holding on to at that point was not the food, but I was holding on to vicious resentment in the past few years. Vicious. And I'm doing everything. I'm doing everything the program's telling me to do. I'm doing 10 steps. I'm reading self-help. I'm working this program. And these resentments are holding on to me like glue, the way the food held on, choking me around the neck, until that my dad's death opened up something. I said, God's going to run this world. Life's going to move on. People are going to get sick. People are going to die. God's running the world anyway. I can either stay living miserable, clean from the food, but miserable with resentments, or I can really get on my knees and surrender. And I knew at that point, I tried everything to get rid of these resentments. And I knew at that point, there's no human aid. No thousands of 10 steps are going to lift it. I need to do that. It's my footwork, but I need God is the only one that's going to heal me, restore me to sanity. And I started getting down. I had no control in this area anymore, and just begging and praying to God, to do this for me. Because I got to the place I had an ounce of control and I had nowhere help to turn. That's where I was, begging for God, and I still do that one day at a time. Thank you so much for listening.
Thank you, Melky G. And now we'll have Sherry M. share with us, and then I believe we're going to have time for another share. So, Sherry M., good morning. Star one, Sherry.
This is Shelly. It's actually Shelly.
Oh, Shelly. Shelly M. I'm sorry. Go ahead, Shelly.
No problem. Gradually got worse over a long period of time for me. I was the youngest of 10 in a very abusive family, and I was raised by an unmedicated bipolar overeater, my big sister, and didn't know any better. We just came home from school and baked and ate. Food was the only good thing. I was sexually abused as a child, but I didn't remember that until I was in my 30s in therapy. And when I was I was a restrictor and a binger, but more restricting and eating my feelings. When I was skinny, I attracted abusive relationships, gravitated towards them. Then the relationship was bad, and I ate, repeated the behavior, and thought of other things, but I had a big mental breakdown when I lost my job, and I was always the provider. I was a single mom, and my job was my identity, and when I lost that, I just lost it, period, and I ended up in the hospital. I came out and I was eating. I didn't really get the solution I wanted. I ballooned up to 200 pounds and I'm like 4'10". I mean, not 4'10", 4'10", shrinking with age. I joined Weight Watchers at my therapist's recommendation. And I thought, okay, I got this time, you know. And nope, started eating. I can relate to deaths and age and some people when they lose family, and I lost my mom, my brother, and my dog all within 3 months, and I started eating again, eating, and pretty much gained back what I lost. My therapist, I'm very thankful for her. God pointed her to point me to OA. I always had a relationship with God, but I think I gave over almost everything but the food, because I didn't think anything was wrong, really. I just thought, this is just me. This is just the way I cope with things. There's nobody else must feel this way. I just felt it was so normalized to me, I guess, that I didn't think it was anything wrong. That's where I'm at. I'm recovering. I'm fairly new, and I have a really great sponsor, and I'm doing this day by day, and I've been abstinent for 2 weeks. And with that, I'll pass. Thank you.
Thank you, Shelley M. And although we do value your experience, we ask that you limit your share to every third day in order that others might share their experience too. Is there someone who would like to share with us? We have time for another share.
Jody H.
Jody H. Go ahead, Jody. Thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome. I had to say something. I haven't talked in a long time. I've only spoken once before, so I'm a little nervous. But the progression of Bill's story, what an awesome story. In looking at that, I can say, what an awesome story of my own story. I can identify with Bill. I was a compulsive overeater as a teenager. And then as I progressed, from there, I started all my diets, trying to control what seemed like an unacceptable fatness that I felt. And I look back at those pictures of when I was in my teens, and I said, wow, I thought that was fat. Look at me now. And I guess what I'm trying to say is, for today, a life preserver was thrown out to me in May of this year when I realized I couldn't do anything about food anymore. I was totally defeated. And I also felt like one of the other sharers, that when I was reading Bill's story, I was really like, will he ever stop? Will he ever stop? And because he seemed so prosperous when he was doing good, and I can identify with that when I was doing really well in my life, why couldn't I just put down the food? I got to a point in May of this year where all I was doing, I wasn't eating meals, I was just eating all day long, and I couldn't stop. And so I reached out for help from somebody that I saw in the Alcoholics Anonymous program, and who had an eating disorder, and I asked them, what do I do? I need help. And she shared with me a vision for you. And it's been like a life preserver. And ever since I started trying to become abstinent, I've had fantastic sponsors. All of them have given me something that is invaluable. Thank you for your service, and I pass.
Thank you, and thank you to everyone who shared. We will now close with the reading from the Big Book on page 164, followed by the Serenity Prayer. Will Jordan L. please read A Vision for You? Our book is meant to be suggestive only. Keep you until then. Good morning, Jordan.
Good morning. My name is Jordan L. I'm a recovered compulsive overeater in Colorado. Grateful to be abstinent and on the line with you guys this morning. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right. And great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then.